That's all right. We're just talking to ourselves here that we have a renewal. We have a renewal of the Scott River and Shasta River TMDL conditioner waivers of waste discharge requirements with Mr. Eli Scott.
Let's see if I can do this properly. Chairman Noren and board members, my name's Eli Scott. I am the Scott and Shasta Watershed Steward. And today we're going to talk about the Scott and Shasta conditional waivers, which are due to be renewed. Grab this. And Brian McFadden will be back in a moment. He's going to be my tough question answer. So what we're going to be covering here is sort of our overall water quality approach with these waivers, why they exist and how they fit into the larger scheme of watershed stewardship and also TMDL implementation. The current conditions of the waivers as they stand today, and some of the progress we've been able to make. Then also going to go over the proposed changes in the draft waivers, review the implementation approach that we take when we're on the ground with dischargers, and also the adoption timeline and what that looks like now. So the water quality approach is based off of both of these rivers being listed on the 303D list of impaired waters with the EPA, which triggered TMDL action plans to be created. Those action plans consider multiple dischargers and have multiple permitting programs within them. So timber harvest plans have their own permitting program within us. We have waivers with the Forest Service, with the county. There's a lot of different things that are covered by the TMDL action plan. One thing that wasn't really covered was agriculture. So that's where these conditional waivers came from, as a way to look at those discharges as they relate to the TMDLs that were generated, and provide a regulatory tool for that. And it builds really a coordinated approach towards comprehensive watershed restoration. So cultivating partnerships with agencies, community groups, stakeholders, funders, and landowners. The Scott TMDL Action Plan was adopted in 2005. It's temperature sediment TMDLs, and there's a summary of the analysis that came about with those. It focuses on riparian shade, water management, erosion control, and it identifies the actions that are necessary to achieve those water quality objectives, the parties responsible for implementing the identified actions, and the monitoring and reporting requirements for those dischargers. The Shasta is very similar. Again, we're looking at, it was adopted in 2006. Temperature and dissolved oxygen are the TMDLs that came out of that. Focuses on riparian conditions, tailwater impacts, and again, the actions necessary to achieve those water quality objectives, and the same sort of reporting requirements. So the current conditions as the waivers exist today, they require dischargers to employ land stewardship practices that minimize control and preferably prevent the discharge of pollutants. Also allows water board staff access to properties to assess the impacts, and requires dischargers to submit plans to and or other documentation if requested by the executive officer. So that could be a ranch management plan, a grazing management plan, erosion control plan, or a tailwater management plan. Through a lot of 319H funded work and some other grants we've been able to accomplish in the Shasta, the installation of 24 stock water systems, 8 irrigation efficiency projects, 6 tailwater diversion projects, 3,750 linear feet of riparian plantings, 23 ranch assessments have been performed, 133 miles of riparian fencing has gone in, which is 61% of the entire stream reach of the Shasta River system. And as I spoke to, there in some cases, there are some compelling water quality trends that speak towards the success of these practices and the implementation. In the Scott, again, a lot of work funded by 319H grants and other grants. We've been able to get 11 acres of riparian planting, 6 beaver dam analogs installed, 4 major bank stabilization projects, which is important for arresting sediment. 16 ranches have been assessed for a total of 33% of the total stream frontage. And UC Davis, as you heard about also today, has developed an integrated hydrologic model that looks at land use practices as well as groundwater surface water interactions to, you know, look at different management scenarios that can be implemented in the watershed. And so just to be clear, when I say we here, I mean in sort of the larger stewardship sense, we. It's not just the water board that's done this work. It's been work supported by the water board, but also by a lot of different partners that, you know, were mentioned with in the Shasta Stewardship Report presentation. In the Scott, we've got the Scott River Watershed Council. We've got the RCD there, the Groundwater Advisory Group. There's a lot of community groups in these watersheds that step up, roll up their sleeves, and get stuff done. We want to support that kind of work. So because these two watersheds are different, they require a different approach. So this is a picture of the Shasta River. It's real pretty. The Shasta River is a system that's dominated by groundwater. And you just saw this map. I'm going to show it to you again. Because of the way the dynamics work in the Shasta River, there's different opportunities for different restoration potential. So I already kind of went over how these tailwater neighborhoods were ranked. Again, it depends on, you know, where the cold water refugia is, how successful will riparian plantings be, the amount of effort we put into these different areas, will that show returns, and if it does, that's going to be a high priority for us to get to. So in the Shasta River, I've just went over sort of with the stewardship report what we've been able to get through. We want to adapt to those emerging trends that I talked to, or the lack of emerging trends. So we want to continue efforts on identified cold water refugia, especially downstream from Dwinnell Dam and Big Springs Creek and Parks Creek. We want to continue the ability for staff to focus on the areas that are high priority, which means we're not going to require enrollment in the next iteration of the waivers. We want to make sure that we have the flexibility to go to the areas that we know are going to make the most difference and focus there. We want to utilize the data that's presented in the Watershed Stewardship Report to refine best practice recommendations. So if something's working and it's appropriate for a discharger, we want to recommend that that's what they do. If it's not going to work for them, there's no reason to recommend it. And now we have the data to better figure out what's going to be effective and what's not going to be effective.
Eli, just point number two kind of went over my head. Not requiring enrollment. How's that working for you?
So we know how requiring enrollment works. So when we started out with the Shasta conditional waiver, there was a formal process for enrollment where a lot of notices of intent were sent out, and a lot of the responses that we got back weren't necessarily in the high priority area, required a lot of staff time to go through and figure out, you know, does this area need attention? Is there an impact there? Are they even grazing? And rather than spend a lot of time going through paper and finding out that X percent of the NOIs that we get back are not a priority to go after, we know where the priorities are. We know where we want to spend staff time. So it's better for us to focus on those areas rather than spend time with an enrollment process, you know, when we know who we have to go after.
So I totally accept what you just said. Have you gotten any pushback from anyone accusing that approach of not being fair and equitable? In other words, you're targeting folks as opposed to getting everybody in. Have you had any issues or comments or concerns raised about that?
This is Brian McFadden, Regional Board staff for Donna and the Record. I can't think of an instance where that.
And that's good, but it was something that just struck me as, you know, because you're literally targeting individual properties and others saying, no, you're not part of this right now.
Well, I would say that there's a little more nuance to that. We're prioritizing, you know, to make the most of our efforts.
Right.
But it's not necessarily so that we're excluding people from having to comply or being on our list to eventually spend some time visiting with and understanding what their water quality issues are and how they are or need to be addressing them.
Yeah, that's a good answer.
That's why he's here. So the last point on here is to make sure that we're tracking the water quality improvements over time. Right, we want to make sure that we understand the impact that's going on in the watershed from these activities. Even if we can't pin it down to a particular activity, we want to know what the trends are. And so that's the Shasta River approach. Scott River approach is a little bit different. It's more of a homogeneous system. So there aren't priority areas that have really strong habitat benefit. Rather, it's more assessing the entire stream frontage to understand how we can best spend our staff time there. So we want to prioritize based off of risk. It's a property by property assessment of water quality protection. We want to prioritize properties for waiver compliance based on the length of streams adjacent to farming and ranching activities. So it's where management and riparian areas kind of come together, that interface. A few years ago, a guy named Brian did an assessment of all these properties to figure out what that approach would look like. And what we found is the 15 largest landowners had 50% of the stream frontage that came in contact with management activities. So that from that came the biggest bang for the buck approach, essentially, where we can get to these 15 properties. It represents a good chunk of the watershed, and we can focus our activities there. So far with that approach, we've assessed 33% of the stream frontage. So we want to continue moving through that. We've got a few more on that list of top 15. We actually were just on a very large property last month, and I'm going to get through that list. So then we'll just continue to go up the list from there once we knock those top 15 out. So just to give you an example, the animation just kicked in. So can we bring down the lights so we can take a look at this? It's going to get a little creepy in here, I think. So this is the confluence of French Creek and the Scott River. This is back in 2003. So you can see some green dots here. Those are actually riparian plantings. And one thing that's pretty striking about this is the riparian condition is really poor there. And through a lot of different work from a lot of different groups and folks, in 2016, the riparian conditions look like this. It's not perfect, but it is a marked improvement over what it was in 2013. And you can see there is some pretty good infill in that area where there were plantings. And I think Brian can attest that, you know, there were several areas of plantings and focus in this part of the river. So that increases habitat complexity and increases rearing habitat for coho. And just to kind of go back and forth so you guys can get a sense of the difference over time. This is the kind of work we want to continue to do. Continue to expand the riparian corridors because that's going to provide the shading that we need to cool down the river. Thank you. Just kind of summarize what the draft conditional waivers look like, the ones that are going to be coming in front of you in October. We want to extend the existing waiver provisions for another 5 years. We want to continue to allow board staff onto properties like me so I can get out there with folks. The executive officer will still require preparation of plans and effectiveness monitoring. Continue staff's efforts on the high priority areas to make sure that we're utilizing our time wisely. Focus on incentivizing cooperation for these next 5 years while also supporting appropriate accountability. And also recognize the progress made since the adoption, right? We want to make sure that we show that there has been progress. Some of the new bits of the conditional waiver. In the Scott, the waiver that currently exists had some recommended practices for sort of land use management. Those are now conditions in both waivers. So we've specifically spelled out what we expect landowners to do in the areas where their management comes in contact with riparian areas and water. While we spelled those out, we also recognized that there could be alternative measures that could provide the same or better level of protection, and we want to be involved in the formulation of those with the dischargers. So, you know, that comes out of a ranch assessment, obviously. We can't tell them on the ground how they're supposed to fix something, but, you know, we they can come to, you know, we want to be part of the conversation if they're figuring out an alternative measure that's not spelled out in that waiver. We also added practices addressing chemical fertilizers, pesticides, fuel sources, you know, hazardous substances that could get into waterways. And then we also clarified requirements related to management plans and monitoring plans. Another thing that we did, and I want to be clear that this portion is not a requirement of the current waiver, but it's a forecast towards the next permit that comes out that will likely come out in 2022 after this waiver expires. We want to make sure folks are aware that there could be an enrollment process coming. There could be a tiered permitting requirement based on the threat to water quality. There could be fees associated with that enrollment process. And operations already in compliance with the waiver will likely face a de minimis fee. Really what this is to do is to help us incentivize folks coming to us now, getting involved, putting the impetus in restoration. And they'd be considered for the next renewal and would be subject to a whole separate public comment process, separate, you know, essentially like this, you guys would have to hear it and approve it. So we wanted to make sure we were forecasting that and show people what could be coming in the future. So just kind of to review what this looks like on the ground, none of our implementation approach is changing. You know, we want to focus on the following categories when it comes to implementing the waiver conditions. So properties that meet the risk criteria that are already laid out, whether that's the Shasta risk criteria or the Scott. Water quality issues that are identified through complaints will obviously trigger me to go out there and get on the ground with folks. And areas with unique opportunities to improve water quality are also going to be an area of focus. So my initial steps, I'm going to contact the landowner, usually by phone, let them know about the waiver, and figure out a mutually agreeable assessment date, talk about what the waiver entails, the conditions that are required within it. I want to assess and evaluate their management practices and water quality protection measures and inform the landowner of any assistance programs that they can be part of, like 319H grants, things like that, to help them implement the conditions of the waiver. While I'm out there on the ground, we want to identify the areas where they're doing the right thing, like where they're actually implementing things that are protective of water quality, so they know that there are areas that they're already doing good stuff if they are. Verify waiver compliance or also identify necessary plans to attain compliance, whatever ends up being appropriate, and document the outcome of that ranch assessment in a letter so they have something in writing. We'll evaluate the need for plans and monitoring on a case-by-case basis using a consistent assessment approach. So we have a checklist that we go through with landowners when we're out there. So each landowner has the same, you know, they're judged on the same system, essentially. We want to focus assessment on factors related to discharge of nutrients, sediment, or elevated solar radiation loads, depending on the watershed that we're in. So riparian conditions, livestock access to riparian areas, and is that managed or is it unmanaged or is it totally excluded? Potential discharge of eroded sediments from, you know, areas that already are experiencing bake erosion and then also have livestock that have access to them and increase the amount of sediment flow. And the potential for tailwater discharges, especially in the Shasta like we already talked about, that's a major part of the picture and we got to make sure that we're keeping that tailwater out of the river because it kind of a 1-2 punch of temperature and nutrients. In terms of plan requirements, the executive officer will require a plan or other documentation to assess corrective actions if the landowner needs additional time to identify a remedy. You know, we don't want to just have them say, yeah, I'll figure it out and we'll get it fixed. We want to know what that plan actually is after they figure it out. If corrective actions require specific experience or expertise, we want to see what that looks like in a plan form. And if staff and dischargers are unable to come to an agreement, they're going to have a plan that shows how they're going to fix the issues that are identified on their property. In terms of the scope of plans, they can be simple or complex, and that really depends on the site-specific conditions. So a simple plan could be, you know, they've already got their stretch of the river excluded, but they keep their gate open all the time, and cattle are in there without any sort of management. That's a real simple solution. Let's figure out triggers for when you'll allow your livestock in there and when you'll exclude them. More comprehensive plan could be for a larger piece of property with a lot more inputs into the waterways, or a lot more complex management approaches that they take. You know, we want to know what those plans look like and what are going to trigger different management approaches. Really, we want to continue with a balanced approach. So again, we're not requiring enrollment this time around. Case-by-case, site-specific approach is really what's appropriate in both these watersheds, because different operations have different constraints. We want to achieve comprehensive water quality assessment and protection. Again, that's sort of the overall TMDL approach, and this waiver fills that the gap when it comes to agriculture that exists for a permitting side. It also helps build the stewardship approach. You know, we're not just working out there as the water board. We're working with the watershed council. We're working with the RCDs, with folks who have the expertise and the impetus to really drive that restoration approach forward in a holistic way. And this iteration of the waiver also provides a solid foundation for accountability and enforcement when it's required. But more importantly, to continue this process along, we're able to continue establishing relationships with landowners. I think the difference between when Brian first set foot out there and when I first set foot out there is probably pretty apparent. You know, we have a lot of allies in these watersheds who know what our goals are and have the same goals as us, and that's because of how this approach started, and we want to continue that. So to date for the waiver renewal, we've spoken with all these folks, the RCDs in both watersheds, the Watershed Council, the tribes, the county supervisors, and I've also reached out to the Shasta Watershed Conservation Group, which is the group that is organizing around the safe harbor agreements. A priority for me is to make sure that once that process is over, you know, it also gives folks waiver compliance, and they're, you know, we end up having sort of coordination on that. So that's a challenge, but we're getting there. The adoption timeline, we're in Wairika, June 14th. There about big crowd showed up. It was great. There were only like 12 people there, but it was fun. June 29th is today, so that's this. July 7th is when the public comment period ends. It's the day before my birthday, so this is kind of a birthday present for me to get all the public comment in and get to go through that. And then October 19th is the adoption hearing. So that's going to be in the Weed City Council chambers. Written comments, I welcome them to me. Again, it's my birthday present. Also, you can take a look at the draft waivers. They're up on the website. If you go to the TMDL program page, you'll see the link there. And with that, are there any questions?
Comments or questions?
All right, Mr. Eli, here's the thing. I generally support the approach. Couple things I want you to consider along the way. We have 10 years in, actually about 12 on these two TMDLs. I was around, as was I think John, when I know John was here actually. whether he was sleeping or not, I don't know. But when these were readopted in 2012, and so we go forward. And then, as I said in the previous item, we have the benefit of hindsight. We also have the benefit of looking forward. The general approach and framework, to leave them the same, we realizing that the board reprioritized the 2012 renewals to concentrate on cold water. The original TMDLs as written were just a different approach, and we reprioritized that. We've been staff limited on its face. That's just a fact here, is that, you know, when Andy Baker retired, you know, we didn't really effectively replace him. The Scott River, Brian got drug out into every other which way on drought stuff and flow stuff. So you, Mr., are a welcome contribution, and obviously you're into it and you're going. As we go forward, though, I think we need to prioritize our efforts to continue to concentrate on cold water. At the same time, without a Board Member Giusti's question about enrollment or not, we could spend a lot of time trying to push paper and get people to sign that piece of paper. And I agree with the approach I did in 2012 and I do today to not to go to an enrollment basis. But the fact is that this is a conditional waiver and there are conditions that need to be met. And if they are not met, the existing waivers have all the authority vested into the EO or into this agency to take action. And that's one piece that I would like to see us use. I would like to see us, for one, on the one side of the ledger, use an information and outreach. If we are going to, in essence, ask you to go out into this watershed and prioritize and reprioritize, I think it would be really good leading up to this potential renewal in October on these two waivers to have an information blitz that goes out to the regulated community and partners to say, this is the baseline expectations to this watershed. It's not an option about whether you're in or out. It's a condition of being waived from waste discharge requirements. I don't know of anybody that we actually did pull the trigger on, that this agency pulled the trigger on and did individual WDRs out in these watersheds, even though that it's allowed under the EO. I'm not aware of that. I'm not aware of much enforcement that happened out here. And I think that enforcement and or individual enrollment could be an effective tool. And I think we ought to know how to use that. And I think we ought to use that in certain terms. At the same time, I would ask you, as you go towards it on these renewal, we have, I think, gotten better at trying to get some understanding between board and staff and going forward. This is a five-year plan going forward. And I would like to ask, as you then go forward, to give us a simple outline. We're calling it a work plan. It's just an agreement that's explicit between us, the board, and you, the staff, that's transparent to say this is what we're going to do. Mm-hmm. Now, you've laid that out in great part, so I'm not trying to give you extra homework on you for your next birthday present. Mm-hmm. But from the standpoint of just that we know we're all in agreement, right? This is what's going to happen. I think that would be really helpful. The other piece is, you know, we heard about the integrated report on the Shasta, and yet we have these here, these two waivers. The Shasta, I don't know if that's integrated, if that information that comes out of that integrated stewardship report has actually been filtered through this, and yet we have a public review draft out now that may, in fact, and I haven't seen that report, so I don't know how that informs. It could certainly inform the prioritization basis, but not maybe the nuts and bolts and the meat on the bone of the waivers themselves, and I think that could be important as well. Last thing is that when I look at the action plans, especially for the Shasta, it has just a ton of stuff in there that's old and dated, and it has dates in there that we didn't hit. It has some stuff in there that we need to clean up, and I believe we could get to that through the triennial review and a basin planning exercise. The Scott is a little bit more simplistic, and I think it causes us less heartburn as a result. But I just want you to kind of think about that stuff as you go forth out here. I think your approach is generally, the approach that's here now is generally what I hear is you're carrying that forward. I think that's good. To prioritize towards cold water and threat to water quality, that's excellent. Involving other agencies as you have through stewardship, through the work that's been done to date, is a must out here. The stuff that changes and the things that changes along the way, I think are important to recognize and adapt ourselves. Whether it be an RCD board that doesn't like the findings of a report potentially or otherwise, that we have water rights out here, water right issues, the California Water Action Plan, and those types of things, the safe harbor agreements. There's a lot going on out here that you're right in the middle of in the big scramble, and I think that's quite interesting. Mm-hmm. I'm highly supportive of this approach. I think we need to think about how we use our approach and our effective authority better. We have been staff limited, and that's been an issue here, and there's just no doubt about it. And that's laying a lot on your shoulders to say, hey, go get them. Now it's on you. This board's been highly supportive for the past, since I've been here in 2008, to get, you know, to be interested in these watersheds. And the very last thing is that, you know, that kind of shot over the bow of the next renewal, 2017, you know, going forward next year, 2022, there is changes, and you're right that the State Board has basically, we've kept this be a waiver fee, waiving both the fees as well, and the ag models change, the models change at the State Board to make funding based on fees. And I do think that could be part of the message here going forward, too, that, you know, people that are in compliance, operations that are in compliance going forward under condition of waiver and meeting those conditions, and
I've always liked to try to find a way to reward through regulatory, because frankly, Porter Cologne isn't written in a way to reward. It's quite the opposite. You either do it or you face penalty. But not often is it written, if you do that, do you maybe forego a fee or forego something else? And that, to me, could be a reward that I've talked about it before to Steve Moore at State Board, and it's not necessarily, I've never really gotten real traction on it, but the thing is that these watersheds are unique to try, in our region, to try to handle and how to keep a semblance of order going forward on these impaired water bodies and to have an effective program. So I think you've got the right ingredients. It's really how we use those ingredients. We do have the benefit of hindsight. Looking forward, then, I would look forward towards the adoption, potential adoption we have going in October. Public review and public comments open till July, right into July, day before your birthday, I think. And yep. That's going to be a hell of a birthday party. And then from there, you know, we'll go towards that. And I expect that we'll see what kind of comments we get and take action from there. So thank you very much. Mm-hmm. Thanks for being a part of this. And absolutely. Thank you, Brian, for your work as well on this and everybody else.
Thank you.
Any other questions, comments? I've got two speaker cards. Felicia, I see that you've got some slides, so I'm going to have you go second, if that's okay. Regina Ciccozzoli, did I get that right?
Hello, I am Regina Ciccozzola, Ciccozzola. I am here today doing comments on behalf of the Pacific Coast Federation of Fishermen's, the Institute for Fisheries Resources, and a smaller group called Save the Klamath Trinity Salmon. I grow vegetables and raise farm animals, so I'm definitely not someone who can say that it's wrong to farm. However, I feel like in these permit processes, I very much support the restoration acts and the restoration actions, and I support the on-the-ground working with people approach, and I think that works very well. However, without the threat of enforcement, and without the threat of facing regulatory actions, I feel like the people who want to be belligerent will continue to be belligerent. And I think that if you make an example of a couple people, then it's going to convince the people around the fence that maybe they should do the right thing. I'd echo that there needs to be some kind of enforcement component within this. It can't only be voluntary and only be stewardship, even though I very much support the stewardship aspect. One of the things I wanted to say is in the 12 years, I realize there is some progress, but there's just not enough progress. As you know, there is no commercial fishing this year in the ocean. There's very little in-river fishing for the tribes. The Scott and Shasta watersheds are primary fish-producing streams within our region, and they should be areas that have cold water available for salmon. And one of the things I think is really important when we look at these ag waivers and we look at the TMDL is bringing back the flow component. Flow was identified as a reason for the temperature listings in these areas, and we have not met our flow targets. And we are not prioritizing making sure that we're meeting our flow targets and making sure that salmon are able to get into these watersheds, which is what Felice said earlier. So I think we need to look at these, at the flow issues. We need to look at flow enhancement. If we need to draw in the state board, then I think we need to do that. I don't think we're ever going to meet our temperature targets if we don't prioritize flow. Although, I do support what is happening. That said, I also think that if someone does not enroll and is belligerent, they should have to do a WDR. I think the WDR should be serious WDRs that look at nutrient management and actually regulate the way that nutrients are managed, regulate the way that livestock is managed, and actually have very hard and strict enforcement within them and monitoring. Because right now I feel like this TMDL does not meet the state's non-point policy. And I don't think that the waivers go far enough to make sure that we are going to meet our water quality objectives within the 40-year time span that has been given to this TMDL. If you look at the progress so far, it's very hard to imagine without the flow component and without the enforcement component us ever meeting these TMDLs. And we don't have a lot of time if we're going to make sure that the Klamath salmon survive. I mean, this is the worst year on record. I want to give it time to work, but it's been 12 years and it doesn't seem like it's working. So I do think what's happening is super positive. I just think without adding the flow component, without adding enforcement, we're not going to go forward as much as we need to. Also, I think that we should look at more activities such as road removal in key watersheds. Or I guess that's actually part of the Forest Service waivers more, so I will ignore that and bring that back later. Oh, and one component I would like to see addressed also, besides just the flows and looking at groundwater recharge, is looking at stormwater effects and making sure that there is that when we do have like drought conditions that are then followed with extreme conditions like we had this winter, that we're not looking at massive discharges, or at least if there is massive discharges, there is a monitoring plans in place to deal with that so that we know what is happening when we have these kind of freak situations. Because going forward into global warming, I think we're going to be looking at more and more of these kind of situations. So yeah, I would like to see global warming and climate change also addressed as part of this TMDL review and as part of these waivers. I will be turning in written comments that will be much more extensive, but mainly the flow component and the enforcement are the main things I would like to see change. And I do thank you for these efforts and for getting on the ground with people and educating people. I just think there needs to be a little more action taken in some other areas also. Thank you.
Any questions or comments for Regina? Regina, thank you. Be sure and put in your public comments or your written comments.
Oh, yeah, and I also wanted to say I support the Karuk tribe's request for a one-week extension to allow us to make sure that we get the best possible comments in. And also, in the future, I think it would be good if some of these monitoring reports came in before our comments were due. I know it's been difficult with the lack of staff, but it would really be helpful in the comments to have those. Thank you.
Regina, can I ask, just to be clear, are you asking yourself for a one-week extension, or are you just supporting the Karuk's request?
We're supporting the request. We would like to have another week to work on these comments also.
If in fact, you guys want a one-week extension, can you please provide that in writing to the executive officer so we have a paper trail of that, please?
Of course.
Great. Thank you so much.
Mr. Chairman, I had a question. What is the report that you got late?
Clayton was
talking. Is it the final draft language, the conditional waiver? What are we talking about here?
Clayton was talking about a monitoring report that looks at the TMDL that he's working on. That would be, I think reports on how effective different actions would be is going to be really important. And so I would love to see that report.
And is the timing off just 7 days or?
No, it sounds like it's not going to be ready to the end of July anyway. So it's not like that's going to change right now. Just in the future, I think it would be good to make sure to time it where the reports come out before the public comment period's open.
Okay. Thank you, Regina.
Okay, thank you.
Appreciate it. All right, Felice, I doubled your time again on this one, so you got 6 minutes. 6 minutes, six slides.
Yeah, my name is Felice Pace. I'm representing the North Group Redwood Chapter of the Sierra Club. I lived in the Scott Valley for about 35 years, starting in 1976. I still own property there. I'm a founder of the CRIMP, which was the first restoration effort, the Scott Valley CRIMP, and I'm a member of the Watershed Council still. The action plan for the Scott River, I'm mostly going to address the Scott. It was adopted in December 2005. In Table 410, it identifies, quote, specific implementation actions that shall be taken to achieve the TMDLs and meet the sediment and temperature-related water quality standards. To remove the temperature impairment, it says, quote, the regional board shall develop and take appropriate permitting and enforcement actions to address the human-caused removal and suppression of vegetation that provides shade to a water body in the Scott River watershed. Now, has the action, the first question we must ask is, has the action plan been properly implemented? To find that out, I asked the executive director. That's where I go with all my questions, right to the top. And You know, in a May 31st email, Matt told me, quote, to date, no formal enforcement actions associated with these waivers have taken place in these watersheds. You referred to this. It's zero. The number is zero. No enforcement actions. He did. Okay, I'm going to get to the other part of his quote. But so this would be okay, you know, but if we were making progress, and we've seen we're making progress in the Shasta, and I'm very grateful for that progress that has been made there. But I asked Matt, you know, about the Scott, about both of them, really, and he came back to me, you know, as he always does, and he took time. May 31st, he said, in the Scott River, the available monitoring data isn't as robust, and what is available, mostly temperature, isn't showing anything conclusive. We have no evidence that we're removing the impairments. Now, I already showed the lack of progress. Well, now I want to refer to the lack of progress, and why are we having a lack of progress? So what Matt told me is that we have followed up on complaints, and I make complaints, which have led to changed practices to protect water quality. And then he gave me two examples, okay? And one example there's no access to, so I don't know whether what happened with it. The other one is this site. And what happened is what Matt told me, and he sent and he gave me the letter, is that they took care of this site because it was complained about, okay? And it was complained about trampled banks, no riparian vegetation, direct deposition of waste into the stream. And so I know this family, and I know the guy that the letter was written to, and so, you know, they put in some fencing. There you can see one of the posts. It was right on the bank and wasn't enough to have riparian restoration, really, for vegetation, but at least it would prevent the direct deposition of waste. But this is 2 years later. The fence has been taken down. The banks are being trampled, okay? And at the end of the letter, this is what Matt said to him, quote, in summary, your family's efforts to address water quality issues are acknowledged and appreciated. Thank you for your efforts to protect and improve water quality on and adjacent to your property in the Scott River watershed. This is that property. Now, can we go to the next slide? This is not an isolated case. This is an on-stream feedlot, Soap Creek, Scott Valley. Next. This is an on-stream feedlot for bulls, and that's the trampling that you see, Lower Kidder Creek. Next. This is another on-stream feedlot, you know, Johnson Creek in that case. So, you know, we're not getting the job done, and the stewardship approach works very well with the people that want to do the right thing. And we've made progress with our riparian areas. A lot of people did it even before, you know, there was restoration. They just did it on their own. And but, you know, we're not getting the job done in general, and the policy is protecting the bad actors. So we do need some enforcement out there. And we need it now. You know, it's been 11 years. And under these 10 years and 11 years under these waivers, and we're not seeing it. We also are having problems, if we can go to the next slide, with the this is the National Forest. This is grazing damage on the National Forest in the Scott River Basin. And this is, let's do another one. These are just two examples. I could give you 10 examples of these. Okay, and we have the National Forest waiver. It requires in the Scott River Basin that they comply with the action plan, but yet we're not getting it done. Now, I have hope because I've been working with staff on these National Forest stuff, and I still have hope that we're going to do it there. On the private lands, I think we need to go forward more quickly. And in my comments, I point out how the proposed waiver does not comply with the five key elements of the State Water Board's nine-point policy. In addition, we have a new enforcement policy that's being adopted. I don't think they've quite adopted it yet, but it's very close, that also has that tiered kind of approach, you know, to progressive enforcement. We're not doing it. And, you know, so we're going to continue the same approach? Well, you know, who was it? Oh, Albert Einstein, you know, had a definition. He's attributed a definition of insanity. He says insanity is doing the same thing over and over and expecting a different result. In the Scott River watershed, we're doing the same thing over and over, and we're expecting a different result. And we have this very curious, so I have four recommendations there. They're in the materials that I gave you, four recommendations for what we should do. And one of them is this condition 18 or finding 18 says, you know, in another 5 years, we're going to think about going to WDRs and enrollment. We're going to defer that for another 5 years. Isn't 11 years enough to show that it's not going to work with the bad actors? The good actors have already done it. The bad actors aren't going to do it unless they're compelled to do it. Thank you. I see my time's went up. I appreciate the extra time.
You did a good
time.
Job today.
For a change.
You didn't know.
I worked hard on it, and I'm not good at this. Hey, I'm
here to thank you. I think you did a good job. You got written things in. You stayed on time.
I'm an Italian. I get very emotional, it gets in the way of making a good presentation.
Hey, by the way, I just want to say thank you for your comments. They're taken well. They're constructive comments. They line out with some of my comments, I believe. So I appreciate your work and your thought. And be sure and get them in. Are these your written comments on both these, Felice?
Yeah, these are written comments. I may do more based on the presentations today and what I've learned from staff.
Well, Eli's looking for birthday presents, so, you know, don't be shy. Right?
I'm very hopeful. Eli is out there, and the first indications are very good. You know, I think he's going to
Yeah, we're very excited.
One.
So from that standpoint, we go forth.
Anybody else? Any?
Thank you.
Thank you.
All right, Brian, why don't you and Eli just come back and we'll close you out. Any comments or questions for these guys just getting out of here today? All right, Eli and Brian.
Looks like I just had one comment.
Go for it.
I want to make sure in the conditional waiver we're not providing assurances that we won't be enforcing, and want to make very sure that the waiver is based upon adequate progress being made, and so that people have a pretty clear message that we're taking all this seriously. But without necessarily committing to that on a blanket across the board.
Mr. Juicy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yeah, just to follow up, getting back to my earlier comment about, you know, fairness and equity. There are people that want to do the right thing, and then there are people who will wait until they're pushed. You know, one of the things that I shared with Chairman Noren and Matt yesterday in our briefing is that, you know, I have no problem. I recognize that there are different ways to address water quality improvements. And I'm sure there's a lot smarter people out there than me who can come up with different ways to do it. But what's not voluntary, or what you don't have a choice in, is protecting water quality. That decision's been made for us, and it's called Porter Cologne. So I think, you know, as you have your discussions, what I hear you're doing, Eli, is, you know, you're building trust in the community, and that's what's going to get you there, right? That people are, if you get to know you as an honest man, follow through on your word, stick to your word, that will serve you in the long run. But I think we do have to convey the message that we have to be fair and equitable. You can't choose to protect water quality. Everybody has to do that. And in a subtle but yet strong fashion, you know, that has to be part of the message as you go forward. We'll give people time. We'll hear people's ideas on how to do it. But at the end of the day, everybody's got to carry their own responsibility. So it's just that issue of fairness and equity among everybody.
I would have to say that, you know, we agree with all that you just said there, and also agree with the points that Regina and Felice made about the need for some enforcement, you know, in the right places and in the right circumstances. I think, you know, with my experience in implementing the last 5 years, the waiver, it's clear to me that we're at that point. That there are a lot of landowners who are doing the right thing, want to do the right thing, and have done so on their own initiative, you know. And there are other landowners who are not there. and are not going to get there without a little bit of a push, and that you know, having some examples out there will go a long ways. And you know, I think Eli said it. I've heard Matt say it a few times. You know, we've made some changes, some subtle changes to these waivers with that in mind, that we are going to have to be doing some enforcement here real soon. And we're taking all these comments to heart. And, you're right. The comments we've gotten are right. And, you know, we need to move forward with all our tools in our tool bag.
And then I think if we've written a letter to someone complimenting them on their water quality efforts and they removed those efforts, that ought to be brought to their attention that immediately. Because that does appear to be maybe extreme recalcitrance.
I think there's more to that story. That particular site.
Okay, well, and I understand that may be true. And
That particular site gets, you know, 2 or 3 feet of floodwater moving through there in a big storm, and that takes the fence right out. So they need to put it back in, you know, and keep the commitments. But I don't think it was a situation of, okay, now the regulator's gone, we're taking the fence down.
Well, fact appropriate, but if they were supposed to do it, there were unfortunate circumstances. I think we all understand that. No one wants it, you know, it's not in the next day, but we don't want to be starting over again.
Well, in the interest of honesty and transparency, that's where we're at today. And I appreciate you guys acknowledging that. I appreciate the comments we got. I look forward to the comments we're going to get to close this thing out through public comment. And I even looking forward to going up to Siskiyou County in October and checking it out and seeing what we're going to do there.
I always look forward to it.
All right.
I just wanted to say one last thing. On the note of fairness and equity, I think where both watersheds are at, because of the amount of effort that's been put in by some people who want to do the right thing, the fair thing is to go to those who haven't been doing the right thing and get them to do the right thing.
I think that's exactly the point.
Yeah. So yeah. I just want to make.
Yeah, and we have all the authority to do that now. There's nothing to preclude, nor has it have in the past been. We never had a lack of authority to do that.
Mm. That's right.
It's now just doing that with intent and purpose and good cause. But I really appreciate the conversation today, and we'll take this up again as we get closer to October. And there we go. So we'll close out this item. Thank you so much. Thank you for the comments today. All right, we've got a couple items left. I've got an executive officer.